release from...
The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh, my gracious, Tim. How about that?
We just stepped on their face with a hot-nailed vision across their nose.
Clenzo strikes with a minute and a half left. Holy Buckeye. Michael Vick. Amazing.
And welcome into the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, founder of CFBCountry.com, the host of this very podcast, College Football Country. Today is my week three edition of Take the Points with Todd Furman, Bet the Board podcast, Vegas insider, and an absolute genius when it comes to this sort of thing. We are going to help you guys win some money. Not to brag, but I'm 10-3 so far this season. So if you've been following along with my picks on CFBCountry.com, on my Twitter page, at Josh Parcell, you are a little bit richer right now than you were a couple weeks ago, and you are very welcome for that. We're going to hope to continue that this week. Not as great of a slate as we've seen in the last few weeks, but we're going to hopefully pick some games where we've got some sides that are going to win at the register on Saturday night. So Todd's going to join me. Don't forget, please rate the podcast on iTunes. Give it 5 stars. I got 65 ratings right now. I'm trying to get that number up closer to 100. So if you have 2 seconds, just go give it a 5-star rating. Leave a quick review. That really, really helps me out a lot. Tell your friends about the podcast. We're trying to grow this thing. The audience is getting bigger every single week. I've been very blown away and humbled by the amount of people who have listened and told me that they love the show so far. So thank you guys again. And now we are going to get to my guest, Todd Furman of the Bet the Board podcast for week three of Take the Points. Take a listen. All right, and now I welcome back Todd Furman, Bet the Board podcast. My good buddy, Todd, you came on for week one. You gave us a lot of good insight. We had a lot of good picks. Todd, not to brag, man, but I'm going to brag. I'm 10-3 so far this season. You got to talk me off this ego boost that I'm having right now because I'm feeling pretty good.
You're only as good as your last bet, Josh. So if you keep winning, you can keep boasting as best you want. But all I say, for those of us who'd read extensively Greek tragedy, there's a word called hubris, excessive pride. The gambling gods do not smile kindly upon those who think they're mightier than everyone else. So it's good to be a little bit humble, but ride the wave while you got, and hopefully you're capitalizing accordingly.
I'm trying my best. We're off to a good start. We had a good year last year. I'm trying to continue this wave. But, you know, it's having guys like you on the show that gives me all this smart insight. You're the one teaching me. I'm just following your lead, really. So if anyone should have the big ego, it should be you.
The goal is to just try and give you and a lot of the other listeners the tools to try and make more informed choices. Like we always say, if we take a losing better and make him or her break even, that's a great thing. If we take a break even better and make them slightly profitable, that's even better. So that's all we're trying to do is make you smarter. I can't promise you wealth and riches and the ability to buy your own Caribbean island after just one season of betting college football.
We're going to get there one day, Todd. So why don't we just get right into it here. Week three. I don't love the slate. There's a few games I like. We'll talk about the big matchups. We'll get your insight. We'll start in the SEC. Tennessee at Florida. This line has bounced around a little bit. I've got it around 5 right now. I think this is a must win for both teams. I mean, whoever loses this game, good luck to that head coach trying to go through the next week of message boards and call-in radio shows and everything else they're going to go through. Florida's still missing all those guys with suspensions, Antonio Callaway, Jordan Scarlett. A lot going on here. What do you see in this game with Tennessee catching points on the road down there in Gainesville?
I figured that the SEC, knowing how important college football is to the health of the entire student body and the institution, would have tried to find a way to get the Gainesville Police Department involved earlier and have them sign off on this Antonio Callaway, Jordan Scarlett credit card situation that's really limited their ability to hit home runs and find big plays. Now, whether it's fortunate or not that they were able to have the game canceled last week, I think that works against Florida. They needed a confidence boost against Northern Colorado, but the Hurricane had other ideas. You look at this game, Josh, and I think you're going to continue to see money come in on the Vols. Not because the Vols are a good team by any stretch of the imagination. You don't go out there and put a week one effort like they did fourth against Georgia Tech and expect people to think that you are clearly going to be a logical threat to Georgia in the SEC. But this is a market showing some concern for Florida. Quarterback situation, yes, we know it's Felipe Franks, but is he the guy that can take the next step with more or less 2 weeks to prepare? I think points are going to be at a premium here. Florida's defense can force an early turnover or two to create a short field. It'll put them in good standing. But as this number trends down, there is a little bit more value in the Gators. again, you mentioned it. It is a must-win type scenario for Butch Jones to get off to a 3-0 start. Jim McElwain to get a little of the pressure off his back after that pathetic effort against Michigan. One of the tougher games, in my opinion, to try and handicap that'll have major ramifications on a divisional race. And we're going to learn a lot about both of these teams. My long-winded say of basically there are better games to bet on this weekend than Tennessee and Florida.
Fair enough. I mean, I think if anything, the under is a decent play. I mean, it's a lower total, 49.5 right now. But, I mean, goodness gracious, do you see either one of these teams getting up into the high 20s? I find that really, really hard to believe. I feel like the under is a better play. I also like Tennessee to win the game. I don't think the Florida's offense is going to do anything. But I wanted to ask you quickly, talking about Tennessee, Georgia Tech, what was there any impact on Tennessee's win against Georgia Tech in the eyes of Vegas? Because for three and a half quarters, really, they look like a disaster, but they win the game. I mean, how does Vegas view a game like that? Obviously, they don't remember any portions of the game. They just see results. So was it business as usual, or was there any sort of adjustment on the Vols?
I mean, I can't speak for other odds makers and some bettors out there, but a lot of the guys that I work with and talk to on a regular basis, we actually downgraded Tennessee's power rating despite them getting the win. The fact you look at the stat sheet, and if you remove the final score, it would have indicated Georgia Tech wins that thing by double digits. So that's kind of what you have to go off of, because final scores can lie from time to time, but the stat sheet usually tells you exactly what unfolded there. So I've downgraded Tennessee as a result of that performance. It didn't really change much in terms of my season outlook with their resounding win over the college football powerhouse known as the Indiana State Fighting Larry Bird.
Well, hey, let's keep it in the SEC. Speaking of stat sheets not lying, I really want to get your opinion on one team in particular who's starting to become a little bit of a darling in the public, South Carolina. They're 2-0. They had the win over Missouri. They beat NC State. Two pretty good wins to kick off your season, especially for a program needing to try and turn things around under Will Muschamp in year two. But I look at the stat sheet, and I see South Carolina. They've been outgained in both games this season. They have two special teams touchdowns, a kick return in both games for a touchdown, more first down their opponents have by almost a not a quite a 2-1 margin, but it's like 50-34 over two games. I wonder, is South Carolina maybe getting a little too much credit for their 2-0 start? They host Kentucky this week where they're 6.5-point favorites. I don't know if Kentucky knocks them off, but is South Carolina maybe not quite as good as the record may indicate?
You, my friend, are learning quickly, and there will be ample opportunity to fade South Carolina going forward. I'm just not sure it comes Saturday night in their home opener in Columbia when Kentucky comes a calling, given how banged up the Wildcats are at the skill position. Snell, not exactly 100%. Mm-hmm. And through non-conference portion of the schedule, not exactly the ideal scenario when you get into the meat and potatoes of life in the SEC. We look at the offensive line for Kentucky. Clearly, that's a unit that's been racked with injuries as well. And I'm a little bit skeptical. Despite their 2-0 record for the Wildcats, they probably have as many warts, if not more, than South Carolina. This, again, I know we talked about under in the Florida-Tennessee game. I'll make a case that under makes an awful lot of sense here. Where do the big plays come from either way? So much is made of South Carolina's skill position talent. They haven't shown up, in my opinion, consistently every series like they need to, because you don't get outstatted in back-to-back games. And defensively, the Gamecocks, we can call them whatever we want, a bend but don't break defense. They've given up an average of 330 yards per game. They're only running for slightly over 100. That's not consistent, in my opinion, of a team that people are talking about as an SEC's dark horse, unless something changes, and it changes in a hurry.
Yeah, I agree. I think once we see them get into the SEC season, I mean, they play Texas A&M in a couple weeks on the road. That could be a really important game for the Aggies. And then, yeah, when they hit Arkansas, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. I mean, I think Vanderbilt, to in my opinion, might be as good as South Carolina, even though everybody seems to love the Gamecock bandwagon right now. I'm holding my stock. I might be selling my Gamecock stock before long. Todd, let's move over to the Pac-12. This is a game, this might be my lock of the week, and I don't like giving out locks, but God, Washington State minus 21 at home against Oregon State. Tell me this is a trap, because I don't see how Oregon State, who couldn't even keep it within 30 against Minnesota, is going to be able to hang within 21 against Washington State.
Well, I think when you look at this game, it's always difficult to lay a massive number between division rivals when one of them comes off an emotional comeback in overtime. Washington State pretty fortunate to be able to get the win against Boise. They faced a 3-touchdown deficit late there. If it wasn't for some questionable / poor decision-making from Cozart, I'm not sure we're talking about the Washington State Cougars with a as quick a start to the season as we've seen. That being said, there are some injuries in the defensive backfield for Oregon State, which is going to make an uphill battle even more difficult when they take on the Cougars. I think if you handicap this game, we have to operate under the assumption that Luke Falk will be the starting quarterback. He was nicked up, wasn't able to finish last Saturday night. But I didn't see a massive drop-off, at least in a short period of time. If we're talking about laying three touchdowns, you want all hands on deck. For me, I think the market has more than corrected itself, Josh. It opened at 17 and ticked out to 21. It is definitely a lay-it-or-don't-play-it type scenario. But one of these weeks, we're going to get value in Oregon State. I just don't think it's going to be this week. Gary Anderson's team has definitely underachieved through its first three games.
Well, and the stat that stands out to me about this game, Oregon State is 124th in the country in yards per attempt allowed defensively. That is out of 130 teams. That is not very good, and that's not a recipe for success against a Mike Leach team. I don't care who's playing quarterback. I mean, Luke Falk, who's been there for about 100 years, he took over in a similar situation. I don't care who plays quarterback if Falk plays this week, because when Luke Falk took over in 2014 for Connor Halliday, they still were scoring 35, 40, 50 points a game. So Mike Leach breeds quarterbacks. No matter who's under center for Washington State, I think that Washington State comes close to touching 60 points in this game. I don't see how Oregon State slows them down at all.
Well, if you believe, I mean, the Cougs hang that kind of crooked number on the board, you may have just talked yourself into a nice little over bet there, unless you think Washington State is able to shut them out. And we're talking about a 63-3 type whitewashing.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll go that far. So I might do a little – I know you may not advocate for this, Todd, but
– Here we go. Are you going to make a case for a correlated parlay here? Is that where you're going? You're going to play Washington State, lay the points, and go over the total?
What's wrong with that?
You know what? Honestly, when it comes to trying to figure out angles – correlated parlays, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, make a lot more sense than parlaying games looking for those massive paydays. Because if you feel that there is this scenario, whether it's favorite and over or dog and under, you're going to have ample opportunity where there's a direct correlation between the two. Some books, depending on how high the totals get, or in most cases is low, won't allow it. So, for example, like Wisconsin against BYU, you can't go out there and bet BYU plus the 17 and parlay it to the under 41. Books aren't going to do that because there's a mathematical advantage that the sharper bettors are definitely going to look to exploit.
Right, makes sense. Well, if the books let me do that, you may have talked me into going with a little parlay there, Washington State in the over. So we're going to stay on the West Coast. One of the bigger games of the weekend, just in name brand alone, Texas at USC. USC hovering around a 15.5 point line. That line may have moved since the last time I looked, but this is a tough one to figure out. I actually like Texas to cover this. I think Texas is getting a little bit. Well, I think it's actually on both sides. I think Texas is getting a little bit too much hate for the loss to Maryland, and I think USC is getting a little too much love for a win over a Stanford team that I'm not sure how good they truly are. Where does Vegas stand on this game? And also, don't forget the key stat that I love to use here: Tom Herman, 5-0 in his career straight up as an underdog. He's never lost as a head coach when he's been an underdog.
Well, I'm not going to go as far as saying Texas wins this game outright, but the things you mentioned with Tom Herman, the one hallmark and trademark during his time down there as head coach of Houston, he beat teams he wasn't supposed to and lost the teams that he should have beaten. So what better way than to start your tenure at Texas than to lose as a 19-point favorite to Maryland and potentially pull off an upset touchdown underdog against USC? You bring up some very interesting points in regards to USC. It's awfully funny how one game changes everything. People couldn't short their USC stock fast enough after the Trojans struggled to get rid of Western Michigan in their season opener. Mm-hmm. People running over men, women, and children to bet Stanford against SC. SC boat races them, gets athletes in space, hangs north of 600 yards on a David Shaw-led Stanford defense. And all of a sudden, people can't get enough of laying the lumber with USC, and a number that I personally would agree with. I think it's a little bit inflated from where it should be. Texas, major questions in terms of who will be their actual starting quarterback. Will we see Shane Buechele dealing with a sore shoulder, or will it be Sam Ellinger picking up where he left off last week in their 56-0 pasting of San Jose State? I'm with you, Josh. I think this number is a little bit rich. 15.5 still offers some value. I think anything north of 14 will give you a price that's going to give you a live underdog. And there may be a lot of people across the country that are surprised when this game is within one possession in the fourth quarter in Texas. If they don't make costly mistakes, they'll have a chance to pull off the outright upset.
I just look at USC. I said this on my podcast yesterday. I look at USC and I wonder, do they really have that many playmakers? I mean, outside of Ronald Jones, who's terrific, Deontay Burnett had a big game, but I mean, they don't have a Marquise Lee. They don't have a Juju Smith-Schuster on this team. I don't really see those lightning bolt players that they've had in the past. And they haven't been that dominant even when those guys were on campus. It's been a long time. And Darnold's the best quarterback they've had. But he's even struggled a little bit this season. A 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio so far. I mean, are we sure that USC is that good? I just wonder, are we putting too much credit in that Stanford win when we've only seen Stanford play against Rice? So we don't really know just how good Stanford is. That's a team last year that only scored 11 points in its two games against ranked teams. I'm skeptical of USC right now.
And that's one of the things you're going to see early in the season. You know, which is a quality win? Which is a bad loss? What do you take away from it? And you can go back and forth, and I say it all the time. Well, people want to give Maryland credit for the win against Texas, but for Texas, it's a bad loss.
Right.
You know, how is it one for one team and one for another team? Maybe we'll be talking about Maryland when they're 8-4 and the loss won't look as bad as it did week one. And as you mentioned, if Stanford were to lose Saturday night to San Diego State, all of a sudden that game, the USC dominated the Cardinal, doesn't look as good.
Right.
So I think that's where you find some opportunity. And for me, this is a little bit of an overreaction to a one-game sample size. So I'm more than happy to try and take a shot with the horns at anything better than two scores.
Yeah, that's exactly along the same lines as what I'm thinking. So a couple more games. Oklahoma State at Pittsburgh. This is Washington State wasn't my lock, I really like Oklahoma State going on the road. I know that when you got a home dog, two touchdown dog, that's really, really hard to try and lay points with a team on the road. But Pittsburgh's defense is absolutely atrocious. 120th in the nation. I love yards per play. I'm assuming you probably do too. But I look at that defense that it got shredded by Youngstown State for 300 yards through the air. How on earth are they going to slow down Mason Rudolph and James Washington?
I don't think they can, to be completely honest. And when you look at Pittsburgh, they struggle to move the ball for large stretches against Penn State. They lack a lot of the big play, explosive playmakers that they've had in the past. Narduzzi's defense clearly isn't up to snuff. You mentioned how many yards they've given up through the air. This is a Pittsburgh defense surrendering over 5 yards per carry on the ground. Oklahoma State's going to test you on the ground. They're going to test you through the air. You mentioned the fact how difficult it is to lay two touchdowns when you go on the road in unfamiliar territory, but Pittsburgh's not a daunting home field advantage by any stretch of the imagination. Early kickoff, I think if Oklahoma State is able to play from in front, get out to that 10-0, 14-0 early lead, they'll be able to play downhill. I've seen this Max Brown story before at USC. I was shocked when I read all the preseason comments that Pittsburgh thought he could be their quarterback to at least make this offense a little bit more potent. I think it's just a matter of time before we see the younger kid on Pittsburgh's roster take over under center. And for me, again, it's a lay it or don't play it type scenario. I'm not running to try and lay the points with Oklahoma State, but I would really want no part of Pittsburgh in this particular situation.
I think Oklahoma State is really, really good. And I know Oklahoma is the sexy team in the Big 12 right now, but Oklahoma State, to me, I think has just as many weapons as this, more weapons, to be honest with you, than the Sooners. And I read an article, Todd, earlier this week when I was researching this game, that Pittsburgh's really hopeful to get its fullback back for this game. You don't beat Oklahoma State with fullbacks.
I mean, is the by fullback, do they mean lockdown corner? I mean, is he going to go a little two-way football?
Darrell Revis isn't coming through that door.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what? If they had Darrell Revis, then it changes the handicap a little bit, for sure. To work in Pittsburgh's favor. But yeah, he's not coming through there, and there's nobody else capable, in my opinion, on that defense of really limiting Oklahoma State and what they can do both on the ground and through the air, unless it's Oklahoma State shooting themselves in the foot.
Right. So another game that I really liked early in the week, but the more I read, the more I see other people kind of on the same train, and I hate getting on the underdog, the darling of the week. Mississippi State, 7-point home underdog against LSU. Night game down there at Davis Wade in Stark, Vegas. LSU team that we don't really know a ton about outside of Darius Geis. They pretty much just relied on him and rode him to that win over BYU 2 weeks ago. At Orgeron in a big spot on the road. I mean, I think Dan Mullen's the better coach in this game. I mean, all signs are pointing to a Mississippi State cover, if not a win. But it seems like everybody else is on board with that. So when everyone else is on board with that, I get nervous. I get scared away from those underdogs.
I'm not sure what LSU is right now. I mean, we've seen them go out there and they dominated UT Chattanooga. Big freaking whoop. I mean, who cares?
Right.
We saw them shut down BYU, the BYU Cougars offense. I mean, they might not be able to score in a phone booth the way that they've been able to struggle, I should say, to move the football. So this is Matt Canada's debut, in my opinion. You're on the road in hostile territory. Has Danny Etling taken the next step? Can you do something to force them to respect your passing game, opening up running lanes for Darius Geis? Mississippi State on the other side, don't be fooled by some of their defensive metrics. This is a team right now holding opponents to under 2 yards per carry. Well, it helps on one play against Louisiana Tech that counts as a negative 87-yard rushing game. So if you use that to normalize their numbers, I believe that they're surrendering a little over 4 yards per carry. Nick Fitzgerald is an outstanding talent. I'm not going to take anything away from what he can do, both running and throwing the football. But this is a different animal. And like you said, when everybody starts to gravitate towards the underdog, it's always cause for concern. Me personally, I think over makes a little bit of sense. 51.5, 52 widely available. I have a feeling this could have a little bit more offense than we've seen in recent meetings. When you talk about making a case for the dog, I can understand where people are coming from. The last three times these two teams
so
have
close.
Played... Exactly. You have not had a game decided by more than 5 points, but how quickly we forget it was a 20-point lead for LSU going into the fourth quarter last year, and it was Mississippi State with that frenetic comeback coming up just short.
Yeah, they almost pulled off the miracle down there in that game in Baton Rouge. So, yeah, I'm probably going to end up staying away from this game. I really, really liked it early in the week, but the more I hear about people jumping on the Mississippi State bandwagon, the more it scares me away. I'll probably be pissed off Sunday morning when the Bulldogs pull off the upset, but I'd love to see it. I love chaos. I think that'd be a great win for Dan Mullen. Like I said, they have the better coach in that game. And I mean, what does Vegas see? I mean, with LSU's coaching staff, I mean, Ed Orgeron has to be a negative, right? Nobody wants to bet on that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't give Ed Orgeron the benefit of the doubt whatsoever. If you were to tell me each week LSU that it was the coordinators that were handling everything, that Canada was doing everything offensively, and we were looking at, you know, Aranda handling everything on the defensive side, and Ed Orgeron just basically sat in his office and ate gumbo, I feel much more comfortable with the direction of where LSU was going. I think Coach O, you look at what he's done as an interim coach, a winning record, it's been outstanding, but when he's a full-time head coach, albeit not with coordinators of this caliber, he's struggled mightily. So this is going to be an interesting team to try and watch. We know that they have the talent year in, year out to compete with the Alabamas of the world and the elite programs within the SEC, because LSU's right there with them, but they fail to meet that expectation. It's got to start here in Starkville on Saturday night for me to give a sign-off to LSU.
Yeah.
And if they're able to win this game by 2 touchdowns or, you know, 17-plus with what I see as a coaching disadvantage, Dan Mullen against Ed Orgeron, then maybe I'll start to buy into some of this LSU hype, because I do have them in my top 10. I'm just not sure that I have them as a viable top 5 team until I see this offense actually perform in hostile territory.
You know, this is a little bit off topic, but when I think about Ed Orgeron, I think about best case scenario for LSU is that Ed Orgeron basically does for the Tigers what Dabo Swinney did for the Tigers up in Clemson. And when Swinney took over that Clemson job, he was a rah-rah guy. He was an emotional guy, a lot like Orgeron, a position coach really his whole career, never really a coordinator, just like Orgeron, who has been coordinator. I don't even know the last time he was a coordinator. Maybe he was, and I'm forgetting, but he was just the guy who was that emotional leader. And for Dabo Swinney, it didn't really work for a few years. They weren't really gaining any momentum. He kind of became on the hot seat. Then he hired Brett Venables and Chad Morris, and all of a sudden Clemson took off. I wonder if LSU is in that same boat. You got the recruiter as the face of the program. Hire the coordinators like Canada and like Aranda, who can run the ship and call the X's and O's, and then maybe you see the thing take off. LSU still needs a quarterback, but I think that the model there is what Dabo Swinney's done at Clemson. Maybe that's the best case scenario for LSU.
There is a lot to be said, Josh, no matter what business you're in. If it's head coach of a football team, if it's running a Fortune 500 company, if it's running anything out there, if you surround yourself with good people and mm-hmm. you can identify talent as a CEO, that's as valuable a skill set as anything else, instead of micromanaging people, because there just aren't enough hours in the day, no matter what business you're in. So if you can find people and go, hey, I trust you to handle this completely. I'm going to trust you to handle this, and all I'm going to do is kind of oversee and make sure all the pieces mesh. Then Coach O is a lot smarter than I am if he's been able to corner the market, because there's no reason he shouldn't be able to win with the talent he's got at coordinator on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball.
That's why I surround myself with people like you when I do this podcast.
Try and do our best. I mean, it's been a long time coming to try and raise that gambling IQ with one of our mutual friends, Clay Travis. That's been even longer. But, I mean, he puts together a massive winning week 1, and I think my skill set isn't needed anymore.
Well, you should feel good. I mean, I would consider myself somewhat of your protege as well. I mean, Clay's, what, 14-3? And I think he's 14-3, right, so far?
I mean, it's been a good start. You're sitting at 10-3.
Yeah.
If both of you guys have win percentages north of 55 when the season's over, then I'll think my teaching ability and some of my star pupils are actually living up to the expectations that I've heaped on their shoulders.
Your commission check will be in the mail come December. Don't worry.
I'll wait for it. Better have a couple zeros on it. That's all I got to say.
Maybe in front, not on the back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I expect it to be on the right. I expect it to be on the right side of the decimal point, not the left.
Well, I can't make any promises.
Vice versa. Vice versa, I should say.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Clint, let's just get to 55% before we start worrying about commission checks. How about that? Last game that I want to talk to you about, obviously, Clemson-Louisville. The Tigers, three-point favorites on the road at night, primetime game. Everybody in the world is picking Clemson in this game. I want to pick Clemson too, but I'm starting to come around. I start thinking in my head all of the teams that have gone into Louisville in these big games, whether it was Florida State last year at a noon kick or whether it's these teams that have gone in on Thursday nights or Saturday nights, prime time. That's a hard place to win. Kelly Bryant in his first road start. I'm talking myself out of Clemson, even though they have the better team. They are better on just about every position outside of quarterback. Something tells me Louisville is going to do something funky and win this game.
I may talk you more into the Clemson side because
do
if
it.
You look at some of the X's and O's and the matchups here, I'm not sure how Louisville makes sure that Lamar Jackson is able to walk out of this Papa John Stadium on Saturday night in anything but a body bag. I mean, we look at what this Louisville offensive line surrendered, 27 sacks the final four games of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I know they've only given up two sacks against Purdue and North Carolina, those defensive juggernauts, of course, known for putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks, but he's still been under duress what feels like every time he drops back to pass, and his legs have bailed him out quite a bit. I'm not sure he's going to be so fortunate because the one thing we know in college football, defense travels, and that's exactly what Clemson has. As long as Kelly Bryant doesn't make mistakes at key junctures, and I think Dabo's smart enough not to put him in a position that he can create short fields for Louisville, Clemson's going to be just fine here. I do worry about them if Louisville starts playing downhill. Clemson has the firepower to match them score for score. That's a very realistic concern,
yeah.
I think anybody should have. I mean, I've kind of spoken to some people, and a lot of people that I know are trying to make the case for Louisville. They want to make a case for a team that's only been a home dog three times since 2010. They're 2-1 in the limited sample size. For me, it's Clemson or pass. However, I'm much closer to passing than I am to walking to the window trying to lay the three with the Tigers in this particular game.
It's exactly. That's where I'm with you, too. I think sometimes, at least this happens to me. I don't know if this happens to anybody else, but you look at numbers in your head and you research all week and you think you have an idea of what's going to happen in a game. And then you turn the game on a prime time on a Saturday night and you see the crowd and you feel the energy and you're like, shit. Like, there's something different about seeing those teams in those environments and how they respond. And you realize, I mean, that stuff does have an impact. I mean, what kind of home field advantage? I don't know the exact number. What is the home field advantage for Louisville typically?
It changes. I mean, every scenario is a little bit different. I think this is where sometimes recreational bettors just try and use a baseline number. So for me, in a prime time situation like this, knowing everything that Louisville is going to try and put into it, I'll give the Cardinal 4.5 points of home field mm-hmm. advantage here. I won't quite go higher than that, but that's towards the top end of what I typically will give for a Saturday night primetime game. Penn State similar in a whiteout type scenario.
Yeah.
You do have to factor that in. The biggest thing in all of these kind of instances, these teams just have to start fast because when you play in front of that kind of crowd with all that emotion, if you get down, it zaps the energy out. And as energizing effect it can have when you're running well, it can do the exact same thing 180 degree difference. So it's a game that if Louisville wins, hey, I'll tip my hat to them and start to buy into Lamar Jackson Heisman 2.0 and temper some of those expectations for Clemson. But I fully believe the Tigers are the more complete football team. Defensively, they'll be able to get to Lamar Jackson with some NFL caliber talent on that defensive line and make life extremely difficult for a Louisville team that doesn't have their leading running back and also is dealing with some injuries in the back end, specifically to Jair Alexander, arguably their best cornerback.
Todd, I'm always smarter when I talk to you, man.
There aren't a lot of people that can say that, but when it comes to gambling, I'm more than happy to try and educate. If you want to know about politics, life advice, or anything along those lines, I can recommend a laundry list of better contacts than the advice I'd be able to lend you there.
Well, thankfully, we're going to stick to gambling here, trying to win a little bit of money this weekend. So, Todd, man, thank you for joining me. We're going to do it again, hopefully soon. Everybody loved it last time. And go check out the Bet the Board podcast. You guys are doing a lot of big things over there, you and Payne Insider. Hope Payne is doing okay out there in the Florida weather. Seems like everything's coming out okay.
He's starting to put the pieces back together. I think he's embellished a little bit. He didn't want to do our Monday NFL podcast this week. Wanted to try and take a week off. But, yeah, no, thankfully, everything is good. And hopefully a lot of the folks that are listening down there in Florida and still the areas affected by Hurricane Harvey as well in Houston, starting to put the pieces back together. We always take what we have for granted until situations like this unfold that we have absolutely no control over.
For sure. Well, thanks again for joining me. And if you had the under on number of embarrassing Vegas stories about Josh on this podcast, you can cash your ticket this time, unlike last time. So thank you for keeping your mouth shut this time. My parents do listen to this podcast, Todd, so we gotta be careful about these things.
I figured we would try and be a little bit more professional now. That was essentially rookie hazing as your podcast continues.
On my own podcast.
We'll have other stories that we can share, but we'll pick and choose our spots.
There we go. All right, man, Todd. Well, thanks again. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me, man. Good luck this weekend.
All right. There you have it, Todd Furman. Thanks again to Todd for joining me on Take the Points, our weekly gambling edition of the College Football Country podcast. If you guys want more insight, analysis, opinion, go visit cfbcountry.com. We're giving out picks every Friday. We're giving out insight analysis every single day. The voice of college football fans. Hope you guys check it out and enjoy it. Also, make sure to go listen to Todd and Payne Insider on Bet the Board podcast. Not only do they talk college football, but they do an NFL show as well. Several NFL shows that are very, very good. And quite honestly, the best gambling insight that there is out there. Todd also does his rankings every week on Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis. He does such a great job. He's a hardworking guy and he's a lot of fun and he's very, very smart. So thanks again to him for joining me and enjoy the games this weekend, week three. College football, we're almost hitting that first quarter mark already, so enjoy it while it lasts. A lot of great games this weekend. Hope you guys enjoy them. Hope you guys took some of our advice, make some picks, take Washington State and the over. There's your winner this weekend. Hope y'all are listening. That's your winner. Be well. Enjoy the weekend. Go Hokies.